Hi, welcome back to Unbound and Soaring. I'm your host, Gala, and I am so grateful to be here with you today. I have to apologize. This episode was supposed to be released last week, but it's been a crazy couple of weeks for me, and finding the time to do this properly just wasn't possible. I chose, instead of a huge amount of stress trying to do an impossible amount of absolutely everything that I had and wanted to do, I was going to have to be a little more realistic with myself and ease the pressure a little. I also didn't want to half-ass this and push something through just to get it done. This episode is a little personal for me and one that's still a bit of a trigger, so it took some extra time to get through. Besides being a single parent with very busy 5 and 10-year-old kids home with me, I also work full-time, and sometimes life can be a little overwhelming, as I'm sure any single parent will tell you, but I'm working on it. And being here with you is definitely where I want to be. I hope you can also learn to be compassionate with yourself when things become overwhelming. In the last podcast, we took a high-level look at coercive control and its many different areas, such as isolation, sexual coercion, stalking, financial control, and parental alienation. There's another main type of coercive control that really needs its own episode. Today, we are discussing gaslighting. We'll also unravel its layers, understand its effects, and most importantly, equip you with tools to overcome it. And I'll share some personal stories. So let's take a deep breath and get into it. I feel like gaslighting is something we hear a lot about these days, from shorts on social media, movies, even The Chicks, former Dixie Chicks, wrote a song called Gaslighter. But what exactly is it? Well, it's a form of psychological manipulation that makes someone doubt their own feelings, thoughts, and even memories. The term gaslighting originates from a 1938 play and subsequent film titled Gaslight, starring Ingrid Bergman, who won an Oscar for her performance, which came out in 1944. Side note, it also starred Angela Lansbury in her film debut, which was supposed to be minor, but she was so brilliant that she received a Best Supporting Actress Oscar nomination. Spoiler alert, the plot is about a man who attempts to maintain control over his wife by manipulating her into thinking she's going insane. One of the ways he does this is by dimming the gaslights in their house and convincing her she imagined it. Of course, she trusts him, so she gets more and more confused and uncertain about her own sense of reality as he doubles down on his so-called love for her, creating a situation where she becomes increasingly dependent on him and unable to see that he's really the one who is intentionally causing her crisis. It's really important to note that gaslighting can be confused with other behaviors, like someone having a different opinion or outlook on something that they insist is right, or maybe they aren't listening or aren't respecting your feelings. I mean, that sucks, and it's definitely a crappy feeling, but it's not necessarily gaslighting. Gaslighting is a type of coercive control. And as we discussed last time, coercive control is really about a pattern of manipulation, with control being the end goal. They are trying to make you doubt yourself, question yourself, and ultimately lose your sense of self, so they have full power over you. Gaslighting is a tactic most often used by narcissists because it empowers them. Narcissists need to feel superior, and gaining control of their partner's thoughts, actions, and feelings is key to making that happen. Narcissists also tend to have a hard time holding on to sincere relationships, so through gaslighting, they can manipulate someone to stay, even if they're unhappy. So picture this. You're in a relationship, be it a romantic one, a friendship, even with a family member or at work. It can happen anywhere. More severe ones tend to be in relationships, but gaslighting can happen anywhere. Things are once pretty great and you are confident and happy, but slowly, almost imperceptibly, something's changed. You find yourself doubting your memories, your perceptions, and your reality. That's the hallmark of gaslighting. Personally, my experience with gaslighting runs pretty deep, and I'll get more into stories a little bit later, but I'll share that at one point I doubted my reality so much that when my ex would tell me he would call the police, I became worried and obedient. Now, I'm a law-abiding citizen. It's not like I have some crazy illegal thing that I'm hiding and I'm worried people are going to find out. I'm just somewhat of a regular mom. When I would say things like, "For what?" I would be met with responses like, "You know," and "I'm not going to go through this with you again." Now, mostly my fear was that he would actually do it, and although I knew the police would come and leave, knowing there was nothing wrong, the idea of the impact on the kids and the perception from our neighbors terrified me. But I was also so isolated, and my sense of self was so gone, that I would actually question whether there was something I did or was doing that I didn't understand was not okay. He was always telling me that I was mentally unwell, and eventually, after hearing about it over and over for years, that's what happened. Some common expressions you might hear can be dismissive, like, you're overreacting, you're overthinking it, that's hardly important, it was just a joke, you're too sensitive, you're being paranoid. These are all ways of trivializing your thoughts and feelings, diminishing your sense of self. Then there can be confusion added in. You're making that up. That's not what happened. You're crazy. That's not what I meant. Don't you remember? We already talked about this. You're not making any sense. You never told me that. They'll commonly deny they said something. You know they did, but they steadfastly deny it, and you start to question your own memory. And the more this happens, the more you're questioning your reality and you're accepting theirs. They shut down the conversation if there's any pushback, saying things like, you have no clue. Don't worry about it right now. I think you need counseling. You always blow things out of proportion. You are crazy. Yes, again, the gaslighter knows you're already questioning your sanity, so they want to capitalize on that and keep pushing. They might even tell other people that you're crazy so that if you turn to them for help, it'll be dismissed because he's already laid the groundwork. Sometimes they'll add in a dash of guilt if necessary. After everything I've done for you, this is how you treat me. I can't have any negative emotions around you. How dare you accuse me of that? Some other signs of gaslighting can be straight up blatant lies. It can be baffling because you know the person is lying and with ease, and yet they do it in a way that is so convincing because it's almost like they believe the lies themselves, so you question yourself and your own memory. They might try to convince you that everyone else is a liar, as it will further blur your sense of reality and strengthen your dependence on the gaslighter. You might also see a lot of words over actions. A gaslighter can talk and talk and talk, but when it comes to making any action, it's often a different story. Sometimes the talk can even be of things like an outpouring of so-called love. In order to keep the victim attached, they will continually build them up and tear them down. They'll fill the person with a lot of talk of love, but the actions and true support and respect are not there. They will often find fault in anything you're attached to. Friends, family, jobs, things, whatever it is that you hold close, they will say and do anything to erode that connection. They'll use whatever you love against you until you only have the abuser in your life. As with all coercive control, they want to eliminate anyone or anything that poses a threat to, well, essentially, their brainwashing, because that's pretty much what it is. So if there's something in your life that gives you power, strength, autonomy, or makes you question things that you're being told, they'll do whatever it takes to eradicate it. With gaslighting, they're not going to be direct, like forbidding you to do something or see someone. It'll be insidious. They'll plant and water seeds that the people in your life don't really care about you. They're bad influences. Your job isn't right for you. You're wasting your time there. It's not good for the family. Your house, apartment, town is awful. You need to leave right away. They'll fixate on small things that can be blown into enormous issues. They'll downplay and dismiss anything positive and find a way to spin it into a negative. They aren't telling you. They're convincing you. That's what makes gaslighting so hard and why survivors can end up traumatized for years. When you're constantly questioning your own reality and thoughts, you will probably, unfortunately, find that you're second-guessing and self-doubting yourself for years to come. That's why therapy, knowledge, and self-healing is so important. I have a lot of experience with gaslighting. Here's a personal story on this and just one small example. In this case, it wasn't to make me think I was sick. This was something a little different. So we had moved away cross country from a big city to a small town. We loved it when we arrived. It was this little oceanside town away from the hustle of the city. Our expenses were a fraction of what they were before, which was great because we only had my income to depend on. And we would drive around and be in awe of our scenery. We settled into our rental and started to begin our new life. My ex has always had grandiose dreams, and he made arrangements with our landlord that he was going to buy this house after the year was up. paperwork was signed and everything. Now, he was unemployed, no credit, no savings. But he was the type of person who presents very well. He's charismatic and extremely convincing. Like, this man could be a cult leader. People just, like, you're just drawn to him and you believe the stuff that he says. Months later, I went away for a work trip. When I came home, he was obsessed that our house wasn't safe. Who builds these things out here anyways? Is there no engineering, no safety protocols? Every time a storm would roll through, he would over-dramatize any creak in our home. The house is not safe. It's going to collapse on us. Danger, danger, danger. And he's our hero, keeping us safe, our protector. He told the current owner about his concerns, which were dismissed, so he had a safety inspector come in, who also tried to ensure us that the house was not going to collapse, but my ex took one sentence out of the whole assessment, negated everything else, and decided that the inspector was useless, no one in this town knew what they were talking about, etc. He convinces me we have to move. So he battles it out with the owner. The lease and future purchase offer is canceled, and we pack up everything and move again. Thank God you were keeping us safe. It wasn't until several months later that I learned that while I was away on my work trip, he gambled away the rent money that I had left him. He didn't come clean with me. He had no way of paying it back. So he concocted this huge scenario to shift the situation and deflect from any wrongdoing on his part, putting himself forth as a hero instead. Another person example, one that I still feel a fair bit of anxiety when I think of. Okay, this is after we had broken up and my ex was fully on his mission to make me aware of my sickness. What is my sickness? Well, according to his Google searches, at various times I've been schizophrenic, bipolar, autistic, among other things. When I was an infant, I was in a car accident. I had a very small hairline fracture on my skull. I was, of course, kept in the hospital for observation and follow-up checkups revealed no issues. So I go through life with friends, family, relationships, university, work. But he's declared that he's realized that the accident has left me brain damaged. He's just the only one that can see it. Anyways, point is, I've been called a lot of things. So he shows up and forces me to go with him to a walk-in clinic. Now, he's raving in front of our kids about how we should just go straight to the hospital anyways, because that's where they're going to send me and they're going to commit me. So maybe we should just skip the walk-in and go straight to the hospital. So at this point, I'm finally out of the relationship. I feel like I've been through hell and back. I've worked with a couple of therapists. I have solid relationships with family and friends who all know the situation. So although I'm confident in my sanity, my anxiety at this moment is through the roof. There's a no contact order in place. So seeing him standing in my kitchen when I came home was a bit paralyzing, and I would have done anything to get him to stop doing this in front of the kids. So we go to the walk-in, separate cars, and we're in the office with the doctor, and I'm sure this is unusual for her. At least I hope so. I remember her saying, "So you think that she's not mentally well?" And then she turned to me and say, "And you think you're fine?" She asked questions like, "Do you work? What about friends and family?" And no one else has expressed concern. Okay, so, you know, what she came to was, okay, so if your husband is so worried and you think that everything is okay, why don't we do an evaluation and put it to rest? I say, fine. She says, it'll be a long wait list. I say, fine. I'm really not worried, although everyone I know, therapists included, are discouraging me from doing it because it's just continuing to give him power, and it's a huge waste of time and resources. So the doctor's office calls later that day, and they tell me they've spoken to the hospital, and with the state of our mental health system, the wait was going to be a couple years. I say, fine, I'm not really concerned. At this point, my anxiety is gone, and I'm breathing and thinking a little clearer. And I say, I'm sorry, I wasn't thinking straight in your office, but I really should have requested that he also has an assessment. I don't think he's stable. She says, well, I was thinking the same thing, but you didn't bring it up, so I didn't say anything. She says it's a good idea and that she'll call him to see if she can get his approval and to submit him also. I might have said, if he does it, I'll do it. I don't remember. Anyways, I never heard anything back one way or the other. Now, the way that he presents this story to anyone that will listen is as his proof that he's right about me. He talks about how he had to drag me to the walk-in, true, and that he's never seen my anxiety so high, also possibly true. but that it took the doctor 30 seconds to realize that I needed urgent mental health support and I'm refusing to go. Now, anyone who knows him and knows myself and our respective track records is going to question this. But when he's telling other people, this is his story of why his life is the way it is, and they soak it up. It's pretty wild. I want to be clear that in no way am I sharing these stories to put a spotlight on him. In his case, I still don't know if he's aware of what he's doing or if it's his own self-protective, narcissistic personality that makes him truly believe his stories. My former therapist once said he was very curious if my ex was a sociopath or a psychopath. Like, is he just doing this to make you crazy, or does he really believe his stories? Because they're so easy to disprove, but he's so convinced or so convincing. I've wondered the same thing for a long time, but either way, I've accepted that I can't help him and I have to protect myself. I've only ever wanted to see him in a good place, but that's out of my hands. I just wish him the best. And I have my very strong boundary in place. I'm at a place where I can almost laugh about the absurdity and the extremes he's gone through. It's crazy to have lived through it, and it definitely takes a mental toll. This podcast is not about the perpetrators in these scenarios. It's about recovery for those who have been in its path. I'm sharing these stories because it has been shocking for me to hear people say, "Oh my God, my ex did the same thing." It happens more frequently than you can imagine, and it helps to feel less alone in this. More importantly, I'm sharing for those who might be thinking, that's my life right now. They're not out of it yet, but they hear this and they see the similarities and it might make them realize something's not right and they deserve better. Which brings us to, what are some of the long-term effects of being gaslit? It can lead to anxiety, depression, trauma, insecurity, self-doubt, and a negative impact on self-esteem. You might even suffer from PTSD. I know I do. It's not uncommon for me to realize that I'm barely breathing or losing sleep because I feel like I'm always waiting for an attack, waiting to hear about how bad I am at everything, how everything I do is wrong and it's not good enough. Everyone in my life is a bad influence. I just need him. What's really helped is that I've learned to recognize that voice for what it is and let it go, to acknowledge it and release it from the power that it once held over me. I can't ignore that it exists, because then I'll stay in a tense state. I almost have to laugh at the thought. I have a moment of gratitude that I'm no longer there, and I actively choose to let the thought go. For a long time, I would check my cameras before going home to make sure that he wasn't waiting outside my house as a surprise, which happened more than once. I realized that living in a constant state of what if was only making me suffer way more. I'm sure one day it won't take the same amount of effort to control these thoughts, but it all starts with awareness. And I'm so glad that you're here listening, and I hope it is helping you become aware of things that might be a little unhealthy in your own life. So what do you do if you realize you've been a victim of gaslighting? If something doesn't feel right, it probably isn't. Your feelings and experiences matter. You need to start to trust your instincts. You've likely been told that you have to dismiss your emotions because they're invalid, but they're not. Gaslighters thrive on making you doubt yourself. But by trusting your gut, you can begin to reclaim your confidence. Pay attention to your feelings and your own perceptions. One thing that can really help is to maintain a journal. I found this so helpful with both processing things emotionally to have that release of words and feelings, but also logistically helpful. If you have things recorded for yourself, you have something you can go back on for clarity, for your own sanity, and to help you recognize patterns of behavior. I actually started to record conversations on my phone because I was so tired of the disconnect between what we would talk about and how twisted things would become later. It was very helpful. Another thing that helps is to talk about it. The more you stay quiet, the more you are internalizing everything and the more control you're giving your gaslighter. I've said this before, but talking about what was happening with my family and friends and even close colleagues that I trusted and knew me in a different context is really what helped me to realize that things were not as they should be. These amazing people provided a safe space for communication, understanding, and validation. You're going to want to set boundaries, clearly communicate what you will and won't tolerate in a relationship. Boundaries protect your emotional well-being and establish a sense of safety. Also remember that boundaries are never about the other person. They're about you. You can't control how someone else will act. However, you can control how you will react. Another thing that helps, as much as you can, find ways to engage in self-care. Whatever you can do, whether it's walk, exercise, books, podcasts, healthy eating, doing things that will help build your self-confidence, your resilience, and that will help you see the good in day-to-day life. Try starting a gratitude practice where you find even 5 things every day that you're grateful for. The more you practice seeing the good and the positive, the better your mental state will be. And as you get more grounded in yourself again, the less tolerance you'll have for anything that tries to intentionally shift that. Beyond self-care, if you can, also try to find professional help. Gaslighting can deeply affect your mental health and well-being, and therapy can be very impactful in helping you to develop coping strategies and help you to navigate the emotional effects. Therapy is a wonderful thing. Remember, you're not alone in this, and there's strength in seeking help and community. It's essential to recognize that you have the power to break free from the chains of gaslighting. By acknowledging the manipulation, trusting yourself, setting boundaries, and seeking support, you can emerge from this experience with newfound strength and resilience. Thank you for joining me on this episode of Unbound and Soaring. If you or someone you know is experiencing gaslighting or any form of emotional abuse, please seek help. Please share this podcast if you think it will help others. Let's get this message out there. You are deserving of a life filled with truth, love, and authenticity. I would love to hear from you. If you'd like to share a story or if there's a topic that you would like me to cover, please find me on Facebook or Instagram or on my website, unboundandsoaring.com, and let me know. Until next time, remember that you're not alone and your journey to healing and self-discovery is a powerful and courageous one. You got this.